welcome into First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. As always, that is Nick Wright. Good morning, guys. Big show ahead. Tom Brady has two new receivers to throw the ball to. Aaron Rodgers might be sidelined against the Vikings, but we start this morning with those Dallas Cowboys. Most notably, Dak Prescott, who threw for just 170 yards Sunday in a loss to the Panthers. Not the way the Cowboys wanted to start the season, especially with those Giants coming up on Sunday. Dak will shoulder the load again to help his team avoid going 0-2. But Jerry Jones is still super high on his quarterback, saying Dak is somewhere between, ready guys, Jared Goff and Cam Newton. Nick, I'll start with you. What do you make of Jerry Jones' assessment?
Somewhere between Jared Goff and Cam Newton, eh? Geographically, that's accurate. Goff plays out west, Cam out east, Dak's right in the middle.
Sure.
I mean, almost complexion-wise, that's, I'd say, somewhat accurate.
Yeah,
as far as that is, if we're going.
Yeah.
As far as stylistically, though, yeah. I can't give him that. How is Dak as a rusher? Because when he says Cam, that's what he's talking about. Cam as a runner of the football.
And Goff as a pocket.
And Goff as a passer. So Dak's never had a game with more than 45 yards rushing in his career.
Never?
Never. Cam had 59 in the first quarter.
In his career? Oh, first quarter.
In the first quarter.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday. Yeah, yeah, all right, as far as Dak as a passer, he's been under 200 yards in 7 of his last 9 games played. Goff's been over 200 yards in 7 of his last 9 games played and only under 200 3 times in the last 2 years. I understand what Jerry Jones is trying to do here, which is take two guys, one guy that runs and is big, and one guy that he saw play the night before in Jared Goff,
right,
and
true.
Say,
it's
and,
a good point,
and
right?
say, this is what it reminds me of. It was a funny comparison because, see, this past week, when you were traveling on your way to do the game, I did a hit on a local television station in Dallas. And the anchor there said, leading into the game, asked me, you know, Dak Prescott, is he kind of like a young Cam Newton? And I tried to be respectful because the guy's a local news guy.
Yes.
Doesn't cover sports every day. But I had mentioned to our staff afterwards, I was like, man, this guy is asking me, is he Cam Newton? Like, that they have nothing in common.
He's
like,
been listening to Jerry.
Right. Or Jerry's been listening to him. I mean, Cam is Cam's the greatest rushing quarterback we've ever seen. Now, he has limitations elsewhere, but as far as the ability to effectively run the football as a quarterback, Cam's the best we've seen.
And the other two quarterbacks we compared him to, one, a good friend of mine, Randall Cunningham, who I played in Philly with, mm-hmm. and then later, when he became a pocket passer there in Minnesota, and a friend of the show, Michael Vick.
Yep.
All right? Those three guys, in the history of this league, or let's just look at the last 25 years, yep. those guys are the most effective runners with the football.
And this is the reason I really push back on the Cam comparison is we would never it's not racist, but it's racial. There's nothing about Dak's game reminds you of Cam, except he's a big black quarterback. But he's not nearly as big as Cam, and he's not athletic as Cam. And so we can keep talking about different things Dak reminds us of. The reality is Dak, over the last year plus, has reminded us of a mid-round backup quarterback who was thrust into a starting job
who
right now doesn't look ready.
Give me
ready.
A name who you think he – who does Dak remind you of right now?
Right now, a guy who's a borderline NFL starter. I'll try to pull one from memory, but is there a guy that Dak's style reminds you of?
I can't say right now. Dak is still in the developmental stage. The only reason why we're doing this comparison is because their owner, general manager Jerry Jones,
right.
is saying that. But the truth of the matter is, there's no one. And I know Cam is one of Nick's favorite players. I like Cam as a player. But I won't let anyone try to compare themselves to Cam Newton as a runner or as a physical specimen.
Right.
Like, absolute. At the combine, Andrew Luck's numbers, vertical leap, running 40-yard dash, broad jump, all those things were almost exactly like Cam. Those are the only things exactly the same. When they get on the field, Andrew Luck is not. And we have seen the last couple years how many times he gets hit and how he responds to getting hit the way Cam Newton is. So I'm not going to let people compare themselves to what I think is the most gifted physical quarterback in Cam Newton. The truth of the matter is, Cam Newton would love to be Jared Goff and Cam Newton. I mean, you talking about that? Dak could be, oh, he's Goff. Oh, yeah, the best of the young and one of these other stallion quarterbacks we have. No, Cam would love to be able to pick and stick a guy like Goff does. He would love to be able to do the play action pass. And just like Jared Goff would love to have the body of Cam Newton. Don't put this type of pressure on your quarterback. And now, this is the question I ask myself. Has Jerry convinced himself of this? Because he's getting ready to have to write a big check. Because if your quarterback is that next season, because Dak was not a first rounder, they're going to have to sign him to a ginormous contract next year. And if they decide to do that, I believe the Dallas Cowboys and their arc and trajectory into the next few years, it's going to be, to me, Dak right now is fighting to see if he's going to be the franchise quarterback in Dallas.
Exactly.
If he does not have a good year, I believe Jerry Jones is going to regret what he said yesterday.
Well, look, the bottom line is Jerry Jones fully supports Dak Prescott, wants to support Dak Prescott, wants Dak Prescott to be the guy that he's describing and the guy that he has supported. But then he also went on to say yesterday, talking about his receivers, they did get separation. We just didn't get the ball to them. So you have to wonder how much of it is on his young quarterback and how much of it is on the receivers that he either has or really doesn't have on that offense.
Jenna, that is a great observation. I jotted those same quotes down because we did that. I knew that wasn't the quote we were leading with. That, to me, was the more relevant quote, because you can't have a situation where, see, you talked about before the game, Jerry went through each and every lineman, didn't he?
Yes.
And evaluated their play, said they played well, said the guard did this, the center did that, spoke well of them. Says Dak can be this. Says the wide receivers, quote, did not play bad, and as you said, they got separation. We didn't get the ball to them. Well, then how the hell you score 8 points? Unless your quarterback was an enormous limiting factor. I know Zeke only had 15 carries, but he gave you 70 yards and a touchdown. Like, your quarterback was the limiting factor, along with what I would say, I think he misevaluated the line play. I think the offensive line got eaten alive by Carolina's front. But this is... we said it going into the year. Because he doesn't have that fifth-year option, this is an enormous year for Dak Prescott and an enormous year for the Cowboys as far as what the future of that position will be.
I know what would have happened, but just imagine if one of the wide receivers would have said after the game, hey, you guys didn't get many catches and everything. Allen Hurns, they go to Hurns and be like, what happened? Oh, I was open. So you got to be careful. Jerry doesn't know what he's doing when he starts saying that guys were open. So now the reporters, when they go to the wide receivers, were you guys open? They have a problem answering, because if they answer, yes, I was open, then, well, you didn't get delivered. Either the offensive
puts
line
them in a tough
was
position.
Bad or the quarterback was bad.
All right, so now they face the Giants, and they obviously want – they cannot afford at this point to go down 0-2. What do you want to see from Dak facing the New York Giants this weekend?
I want to see how many completions he can have just on straight drop back. Well, why is that important? Because the defense is going to give them that. They put seven guys to the line of scrimmage in the whole ball game against the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of times they had free access on the outside. They had young corners they were going against. They didn't attack them. I want to see them be able to attack people on the outside. And I want to see how many plays. Nick, how many pass plays did they have over 20 yards?
Zero. Oh. They had zero plays over 20 yards.
Oh, you cannot win in this league with big plays. Not unless you got the purple people eaters, the fearsome foursome, the 85 Bears. You're not going to be a Ray Lewis in the Ravens. You're not going to be able to win NFL games when you don't have that type of productivity. And that type of productivity will open up the running game. So Jerry can make as many excuses. Hey, say he's the cross between Tom Brady, Cam Newton, and Y.A. Tittle. I don't care. You can try to. This is what people do. When they like you, they look beyond your faults or your deficiencies. When they don't like you, they bring up all the little stuff. And that's what's going on. Dallas is stuck with Dak right now because they've changed their coaching staff, their wide receivers, they've changed those. And Jerry has publicly said, this is a Dak-friendly offense.
Right.
Well, it should be a Zeke-friendly offense, because he's the best offensive player they have.
And as far as this week, it would be good for the Cowboys, and it'd be nice to see Dak Prescott get back on track this week. I believe the Cowboys can beat the Giants without Dak getting back on track, because unlike the Carolina game, I think this is a game Zeke can dominate. I think Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys offensive line can dominate the Giants front. I also think the Giants are very limited offensively. We saw that this past week, and you don't have to score 28 points points to beat them. So I think this is a game where the focus is going to be more on Zeke getting back to the form we saw him at pre-suspension last year rather than a game that Dak dominates. But you can't have, I said at the beginning of the show, 7 of his last games under 200 yards passing. Mm-hmm. That's all right if you're the LSU quarterback. That is not all right if you're the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. And that's a trend he's got to stop.
Another quarterback who had a shaky start on Sunday, Ben Roethlisberger, coming up. How worried should the Steelers be after they tied the Browns? Hear it from Big Ben next on First Things First. Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking best celebrity fans. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag for your school. Learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. Thus far, USC is leading this week. Guys, which school would you vote for?
How's Ohio State not in the top five, C?
Well, they got a weird way that they rank them and everything. We only been playing football since 1890.
And LeBron's a celebrity fan. You're a celebrity fan. See Tristan Thompson back there.
I was going for Ohio State.
Jenna's a pseudo-celebrity fan.
Well, I can understand USC. USC with all the celebrities being in Hollywood.
McConaughey.
LA. LA. That's Texas. Longhorns. But LA, all these celebrities live there and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're not really smart. They can't get into UCLA. So they got to go over to USC. Yeah. All right? They can't get in. They can't get in over at UCLA. So USC is way up there. They've always had a lot of stuff. And Snoop didn't graduate from there, but just by... He had a relationship with a professor, and they gave him an honorary degree.
And Dre's got a building named after him there. So USC, I get it. They do have the Hollywood aspect. Okay, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah. Once again, Jenna's upset Binghamton's not on the list.
Just a little bit upset. Not mortified. Just a little bit upset. Don't laugh while you take your coffee sip. Hey, we're going to get to Big Ben in just a second, but first... Some great high school highlights. Oh. Georgia High School Football, Augusta Prep's Bailey Adams coming down with an amazing catch.
Oh! Go ahead, C.
It reminds me of the Saints interception, Lattimore, last year that he got against Atlanta, where the ball was landed on his back.
I was thinking the famous Brett Favre play on Monday Night Football, where Antonio Freeman, he falls down on the sideline, the defender falls down. Yeah,
you
gets
have
up
no
and
clue
runs.
What you're doing, do you?
What do you mean?
That was against my Vikings, doofus.
Yeah, well, sorry. You didn't play DB. Doofus.
Yeah, I handled the held that elbow.
Yeah, you did.
When mutual doofuses are going on, I like to let this one play out.
Okay.
Lower Cape May Regional High School. This one here in New Jersey, Patrick Moore.
Matter of fact, my name is Rufus.
Kick
your name
blocked.
Is Doofus.
Doesn't matter. Breaks a ton of tackles and gets in the end zone. Now watch it again.
That's brutal for the defense. You block the kick and you end up giving up the touchdown. Oh.
Man, shout out to kickers, man. We don't think are football players. This kicker's a football player.
Yeah, he might play a little defense, too. High school football, go both ways.
All right, finally, Ocean Springs High School, Mississippi. Isaac Gowdy catches the interception off of a teammate's foot.
Oh.
You see that?
I didn't know Tim Tebow left the Mets farm system and was playing high school again, number 15. That's Tim Tebow. He throw that thing just like him, too. That thing might go anywhere.
Right off his foot.
He sure does. That's a hell of a play right there.
All right, moving on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. An uncharacteristic start for Ben Roethlisberger in week one, turning the ball over 5 times in a tie with the Cleveland Browns. Bit of a head-scratcher since Ben talked about feeling as strong as ever coming into camp. We remember that. We learned yesterday he's dealing with an elbow injury, one that might limit him in practice this week. Needless to say, Roethlisberger wasn't thrilled with the way week one played out.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you don't win a football game, it feels like a loss. So it was, yesterday was tough. Sunday coming home, and then yesterday was tough. And, you didn't lose, but you also didn't win. So it definitely hurts. You know, the biggest thing that you take away from that game is the turnovers. You know, we turned the ball over 6 times, which is crazy to even think you have a chance to be in a game. In an NFL football game with 6 turnovers, so there's such a negative in that sense, but there's also a positive that we were still in the game. And I told our defense after the game, thanks to you guys for keeping us in it and special teams for helping us not lose it.
All right, CC, it doesn't get any easier now as the Steelers get ready to host the Chiefs this weekend. What does Ben Roethlisberger and this offense need to do to go ahead and get that first
win? Let me tell you what the defenders said under their breath after Ben left. You wouldn't have thrown them 5 picks. You're talking about we had 6 turnovers. Well, you had 5 of them.
Right.
Like, what? How could? Like, what about taking some responsibility? Like, for me, with the team, if we won or lost, it was secondary. It was how did I play? Because how I played is going to determine if we could win or lose. I can't control the game and the outcome of the game. The ball's going to bounce a certain way, and I can't control my teammates. This is the ultimate teammate. The one thing I can control is myself. And the one thing I start looking at after the game is myself and the plays that I could have made to build change the complexion of the game. Now, I know Ben's won a couple Super Bowls, but obviously he doesn't look at it that way. What do the Pittsburgh Steelers need? Well, their defense did play great. And they need a quarterback like Tyrod Taylor in this game. The only guy who played worse than him in week number one is Peterman.
Yeah. Tyrod was 15 of 40. It gets overlooked because he had that throw to Josh Gordon at the end, but he was 15 of 40.
So what do they need to get back? They need to be able to have a quarterback play bad like that. How many times, Nick, during the rest of the season are they going to have a quarterback that they're facing play worse than that?
Oh, I see what you mean.
And when you don't win a game, when the quarterback plays that way, no, you did lose. And I'm just saying right now, after week number one, that tie is going to come back to hurt the Pittsburgh Steelers. They always do this. Against the real good teams, they're pretty good. Against the team that they're supposed to be, they play down to the competition.
Particularly on the road.
And, well, they're inconsistent. At home, they're front running. They have the home crowd behind them. On the road, it's hard for them to generate that same enthusiasm. And that's why they've just been so consistent. Do they have great personnel? Yes, but with this great personnel, Nick, I've told you over and over, they get good individual results. But as a team, this is not one of the better collections of teams. I'm talking about tight fit. Like, if we're going to the AFC Championship, they have so many little holes that's why I like New England better than them when they face them. It's because it's the little things. It's not the big things.
And you can point to last year. Last year's Week 3 loss at Chicago, a bad Bears team, as the reason they were 13-3 instead of 14-2, the reason they didn't have the one seed, the reason they played the Jags in the divisional round instead of the Titans. Like, yes. A lot of butterfly effect from that moment. Now, the other thing is, so when we're talking about what do they need in this game against Kansas City, obviously they need Big Ben not to have 3 picks, 2 fumbles, 5 turnovers, disaster, right? But let's assume he's not going to do that. Now, he has done it twice in a year, but let's assume he's not going to do it again this year. What they need is, and this is interesting, but once you dig into the numbers, they need more consistent rushing attack, particularly in the second half of the game. You might say, well, hold on, James Conner had all those yards. You can grade runs on are they successful, meaning how close do you get to a first down? Do you get a first down? James Conner's 11 first runs, 8 of them were successful. His final 20, only 3 of them graded out as successful, and he had a critical fumble. Ramon Foster, remember him? He was talking all sideways about L. Bell. He says after the game, well, you see how Le'Veon is, quote, the best in the world, and Foster is, quote, capable, but Le'Veon is flawless. Everyone on the Steelers acknowledged that one of the reasons they, or Connor, pardon me, one of the reasons that you didn't have AB have the game you would have expected is because the Browns were able to focus on the wide receivers, that James Conner was not dictating coverage the way Le'Veon Bell would. So that's going to happen again this week. I don't think Le'Veon Bell's going to play this week.
No, he's been taken off the depth chart.
And so I would imagine that means it's going to be tighter windows for Big Ben, tougher for Big Ben, and the Chiefs defense can get got. The Chiefs defense got lucky against the Chargers and a lot of drop passes.
But I don't think it's fair to James Conner in a big game like that where he carried the ball the number of times he did. He did fumble once. The Hall of Fame quarterback threw 5 picks.
Oh, for sure.
And he didn't bring that up.
For sure.
Okay? Like, so as a running back, you can only do something in your first start. Yeah, you're talking about potentially L. Bell. He's got numbers that say he would be a Hall of Famer. So people comparing him to that, it's not his fault. Like, he had a good game. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, they had a chance, their defense. They couldn't get off the field at the end of the game. They had a chance to win the game. They had plenty of chances to win the game. So looking at Connor as far as what effect he had on this game in a negative light, I just don't believe it's fair for the second-year player.
Are you saying that you think things would have been different, that he would have had a tighter game had L. Bell been there? Because Ben Roethlisberger was one of the first persons to come out and say, you know what, it's like it's almost a next man up situation. We're going to be fine with who we have.
Well, listen, what I'm saying is you look at the box score and James Conner had over 170 yards from scrimmage and you say he was a perfect duplication of Le'Veon Bell. I think you saw the impact in the second half, and I think you saw the impact on the passing game. It's not an indictment on the player who I thought played very well. In the fumble, you're right that Big Ben had 5 turnovers. James Conner had the 1 fumble. The point that I'm making is when you go to Kansas City, they are, I would imagine, once again going to scheme their entire game plan like the Browns did about stopping AB. And that puts more of an onus on Big Ben because he's going to have smaller windows. It's going to be more difficult for them to
move
the football.
Hey, where was Juju at? Where was Juju?
Juju did not have a big game.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
I just saw him on Instagram and stuff this offseason. I just wonder. I didn't know. I thought maybe he was holding
no,
out something, too.
They've got
I didn't know. I just thought.
No one's going to feel bad for Pittsburgh. They've got plenty of weapons, and their backup running back had a monster game. The point that I'm making is the Kansas City Chiefs defense is vulnerable, and you should be able to take advantage of it. I would imagine they are going to dictate their entire game plan around trying to take Antonio away, which you're not able to do if Le'Veon's in the game, which right. I don't think he will be.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side is Jameis Winston's job in jeopardy. That's next on First Things First. Always a great game when USC takes on Texas. Check out the next chapter in that rivalry Saturday at 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time now for stories brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Le'Veon Bell still has not reported to the Steelers, and Pittsburgh is preparing for Week 2 without him. The Steelers removed him from the depth chart ahead of their matchup with the Chiefs. CeCe, how does this situation, do you think, resolve itself?
I don't know what he's going to do. I guess he's going to show up week number 10. Like, I don't know. I thought I knew what he was going to do. I do know this. Pittsburgh's not going to sign him to a long-term contract. All right? It's going to be a major distraction for the whole season.
I thought he was going to show up Saturday before week 1 to where he couldn't play, but he'd get his full check. I'm going to say he's going to show up sometime this week. Is he really going to sacrifice a guy that's made in his career about $13 million? Is he really going to sacrifice almost $900,000 a week? When they're not getting him a long-term deal, does that make any type of sense? Like, I got to think he shows up sometime this week, but that doesn't mean he plays this week against Kansas City.
All right. Carson Wentz, who missed week 1, still recovering from the knee injury he suffered at the end of last season, will not be back this week either. Eagles are in Tampa. According to reports, Wentz is expected to miss at least a few more weeks, and there is no hard and fast plan for his return. Nick, can the Eagles stay afloat with another Nick Foles?
Because of that defensive front and because of that offensive line, I believe they can. I think that of their opening 3 games, the toughest one was the one they already won against Atlanta. I know Tampa played great in week 1. I don't think Tampa's a great team. They have Tampa and Indy the next couple weeks. So, yes, I think they can stay afloat these next couple weeks, but not because of their quarterback, despite their quarterback.
Well, they're one of the few teams that we thought could survive with the backup in there until their starter gets back. Ryan's supported by a great roster. Offense and defensive lines are very, very strong. And Tampa was exciting offensively, but defensively, they could not stop the Saints. I watched the game last night. So Nick's going to have to be able to throw the ball against Tampa Bay in their secondary.
All right, bad news now for the Falcons. Pro Bowl linebacker Deion Jones will be placed on the IR after suffering a foot injury in the loss to the Eagles. The Falcons say they do expect him back at some point later this season, depending on how he heals. CeCe, how big of a blow is this to the Atlanta defense?
It's a huge blow to them because they also lose their starting strong safety, a big-time player in Neal, and then now they're losing their best coverage linebacker, a 3-down linebacker, the second-year player from LSU. He's a fabulous football player, but his ability to play sideline to sideline and guard running backs in man-to-man, that's what they're going to miss, especially playing in that division, going against Matty Ice and the other teams that they're going to face.
Going against Drew Brees.
Through the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Through the rest of the season, all those quarterbacks can throw the ball. So you have to have some great defenders and any team. If the Saints lost these 2 inside defenders, I would be saying the same thing facing these quarterbacks. So Atlanta's defense, I'm concerned about them.
Absolutely. To lose in week 1, maybe the best member of your secondary and the best coverage guy in your linebacking core and maybe the best all-around player in your linebacking core, with no disrespect to Vic Beasley, it's enormous losses. It's 2 enormous losses for a team that defensively beat you with speed, with getting around the field, because they're not going to overpower you up front. Like, this is, it's one thing to lose a game you should have won in week one, which they did. It's another thing to lose that game and lose two players potentially for the season.
And no other division has two running backs like Alvin Kamara and
Ingram. Christian McCaffrey coming out of the backfield.
Yeah, they're going to have problems matching up with them.
All right, and finally, who would have thunk? Ryan Fitzpatrick would have had arguably the best quarterback performance of any QB in week one, throwing over 400 yards and four touchdowns in a win over the Saints. Tampa Bay's head coach Dirk Cutter called him a good leader who backs up what he says with how he plays. See, is Jameis Winston in any danger here of losing his starting job to Fitzpatrick?
Even before the great performance against the Saints, Jameis, it was on the board that he could lose his job. Dirk Cutter and Fitzy did a great job in this game. I watched this game last night because I was trying to catch up on the games after being gone. And offensively, man, they attacked him. And they lost Deshaun Jackson during the game, and he was having a monster game. So him, Evans, man, they got great weapons. OJ as the tight end there, man, they got some people that present some problems. This is the Tampa Bay that we thought we were going to see last year.
Yep.
All the experts and everything, man, Tampa Bay is going to be that surprise team. We thought that. Maybe they were a year away. Jameis didn't grow his game, didn't have the type of year we expected, but maybe they were just 1 year removed from that. So Jameis is in trouble because not only his play on the field, but because of his conduct off the field.
Deshaun Jackson, the big reason we thought last year Tampa could be a surprise team was the offseason addition of Deshaun Jackson. Pardon me. He caught more bombs, more balls that traveled at least 25 yards in the air yesterday or this weekend than he did all of last season. That is Deshaun Jackson's specialty, is he is one of the top deep threats in all of football. And Fitzpatrick had a marvelous game. The reason I would caution some of the optimism about Fitzpatrick moving forward is we've seen this from him before. A monster game followed by him going back to being Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's actually been a tendency in his career that right after his best games, he then doesn't have an average game. He has a slightly below average game. So I think that under normal circumstances, a fourth year quarterback in Jameis, number one overall pick, a guy whose quarterback rating has ticked up each year, there would be no chance he loses the job. Jameis' circumstances are not normal. Jameis' circumstances are with serious off-the-field concerns and with new people in charge. And for all those reasons, like, Jameis is on a much shorter leash than a number one overall pick still on his rookie contract ever would be.
And you can't forget Mike Evans. If there's not seven better receivers.
No.
So if I had the top eight list, Mike Evans is going to be in that group. Typically, we do group of receivers. We only do the top three or four. We only talk about A.B., Julio,
right.
Odell. We don't go down. Nuke in Houston. Mike Evans there in Tampa Bay. He's a spectacular talent and was dominant in the game against the Saints in week one.
Quick follow-up. When you talked about Deshaun Jackson and what he did last year, is that because you think he and Jameis Winston couldn't connect? Was it a negative on Winston, or was it just him and how he's really coming to his own this year?
Listen, last year was an outlier year for Deshaun in his career. So, like, I think people attributed it to Jameis. And if Jameis comes back and all of a sudden they can't get on the same page again, then people will attribute it to him again. I just think it was a down year for Deshaun.
Jameis wasn't really good and accurate on his deep ball. Last year, if you look at what are the things that he maybe went backwards on, him throwing the deep pass was not good for him.
Special interest by me because Hard Knocks team.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's why. A couple years I know ago. All the, yes. the players involved, and I have a million follow-up questions. We'll do that in the break. Hey, moving on to the Raiders now. After losing 33-13 to the Rams on Monday night, the Raiders are close to re-signing Martavis Bryant. If you recall, Oakland cut him before the season started after trading a third-round pick for him in the offseason. All this with a possible drug suspension lingering over the troubled wideout. CeCe, can Martavis actually bolster this Raiders offense?
I see a problem because Martavis only plays outside receiver. Amari Cooper can play some in the slot, but hadn't played a lot in the slot. Jordy Nelson has been predominantly in his career. He's played outside. Now, people say, man, I'm trying to put a wide receiver team together. Well, I like to have it like a basketball team. I need a point guard. I need a big guy, a center, or a guy who can score.
It's why Tampa, we thought, fit so well, because Mike Evans and Deshaun Jackson, power forward and shooting guard, right?
And now they got a lot of similar traits. Jordy Nelson's a deep threat. Amari Cooper's a deep threat. John Gruden doesn't necessarily have that type of offense like the old Raiders, where they threw the ball down the field an awful lot. So what I see is, how are they going to use him? Like, is he a quality? Is he going to make the room better? Yes, but only if the guy that's making the food understands how to use the ingredients. And I don't feel like Gruden utilizes three receivers well enough in his offenses to be able to take advantage of their talent. If this was the Pittsburgh Steelers and Todd Haley, I've been like, yeah, I feel like he's going to be utilized the right way. Now, is he a talent? Yes. Can he make big plays in the game? Yes, but we all need a system. West Coast offense, what is it? Get the ball out of your hand quick. All right? That's not his thing. He's good with his catch and his run, but that's not his thing. He is better off the further he gets down the field. So the Raiders and Gruden, I just haven't seen it yet. So are they more talented with him in the room? Yes. But I got to talk to the chef and see if he knows how to use ingredients maybe to make up this special recipe that Raiders Nation would be happy with.
And I got to talk to the chef to find out, is there actually a recipe? Or are you just grabbing a bunch of different ingredients?
It could be like your mama. She ain't got no recipe, but it's good.
Okay, yeah, but it better be good. If you're working without a script, it better be good, because what has frustrated me about the Raiders is they don't seem to have a consistent plan. You can't simultaneously be in rebuild while also being the oldest team in the league. You can't trade away Khalil Mack. One of the reasons we thought was because they've got this money earmarked for Amari Cooper, and not have Amari Cooper's development be paramount to this season. We know how talented Amari Cooper is. His first year in the league, nearly 1,100 yards. His second year in the league, nearly 1,100 yards. A down year last year, and then one catch in week one of this year. Six games since the beginning of last season, Amari's had less than 10 yards receiving. That's got to be Gruden's number one priority.
Gruden, when he signed with Oakland, one of the players he mentioned was Amari Cooper. Our passing attack will be centered around this guy. I'm going to continue to develop him so he's going to be one of the better receivers. Amari Cooper has unlimited potential. In the last year, year and a half, we haven't seen his game grow after coming into the league and being spectacular early.
This is a team that scored 13 points Monday night. Is this guy going to help with that?
Well, the thing with Martavis Bryant is theoretically, yes, because he is a big splash play guy. And I actually understand why they cut him and then brought him back. If he has the drug suspension looming, and if he's a guy that Gruden called him, he's like the white tiger. Sometimes he shows up, sometimes he doesn't. Use some odd zoo analogy. They didn't want to have his salary guaranteed for the year, so they cut him before week one. They bring him back after. I understand that. But this is not where the Raiders have a major need. And to me, I am concerned about what's happened with Amari Cooper and the connection with Derek Carr over the last 17 games, from the beginning of last year to now. And I don't know that trying to get another wide receiver on the same page with Carr helps that. And that is much more important. The Cooper-Carr relationship, much more important than adding a little bit of talent to your wide receiver room.
If I'm a veteran on that team, which they got a bunch of them, I'm concerned about the messaging point of John Gruden. Khalil Mack, off the field, no blemishes, great character, great leader, great football player. John Gruden and them said that they were worried about Martavius if he was going to be available. So now we have a guy from Buffalo who's worked himself up, that he's one of the best defenders, maybe the best defensive player that we have. He's done everything the right way. They decide we're not going to sign him. But a guy that they have publicized is, we don't know if he's going to be here. He's a white tiger. I just haven't heard a coach use that a whole bunch. How good is a white tiger playing NFL football? The guy doesn't show up sometime, but we're going to allow him to be in the locker room. And the guy we didn't have any problems with, he couldn't be here. And you make up some excuse, oh, he didn't want to be here. So get a little consistent, John. All right? So I'm an advocate for guys, Josh Gordon, Randy Gregory, Martavis, all these guys, similar backgrounds to myself. But at some point, you got to be responsible for your decisions. And Gruden is going to have to be responsible with every subject for the Khalil Mack thing. Because if you don't have Khalil on that defense, you better have an explosive offense.
The only thing that makes the Khalil Mack a better story was when Gruden came out that night and said, yeah, I know we were lacking in the pass
rush.
Yeah,
I'll look at the film and figure it out, figure out what happened. They also just, by the way, like...
You got rid of your pass rush.
You said yesterday, see, your collection of your decisions. You gave up a fifth-round pick for A.J. McCarron, okay? He's the only backup quarterback on your roster right now. You gave a third-round pick for a player you cut before the season started. You've now brought back and given a second chance. And that's the messaging to the locker room that I think is potentially troubling. To give multiple chances to a guy who just got there.
You didn't draft him.
You didn't draft him. He has no history with those players in the locker room, and he had red flags beforehand. Like, it just, it doesn't, you're not telling a consistent story in Oakland. And sometimes, even if the story's not great, if you are building to something along a consistent narrative line,
yes,
then it can make sense.
And in that locker room, if you want guys to trust you, these guys don't know Gruden. It's like they're not watching Monday Night Football. Like, you have to develop trust in anything that you're doing. I just believe, based on his messaging, it's been inconsistent, and I believe it affects older players because they can see through it.
That's a good point. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Tom Brady has two new wide receivers to throw to. We'll let you know who next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings joins us now. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Great to see you.
Talking some Patriots today. New England remains undefeated this season at 1-0. Despite that record, New England's still looking to bolster their receiving core. The Pats signed 2016 first-round pick Corey Coleman and former Bronco Benny Fowler yesterday, trying to find more weapons for Tom Brady before they take on the Jaguars this weekend. Fans seem to always worry about Brady's weapons. CC, is all of the worrying justified?
Yeah, there's no great quarterback we've seen in the league play with less talent than Tom Brady. Yeah, they should. It should be justified. I mean, they do an amazing job. I don't know how they do it. Like, I really don't. Like, I've worked with wide receivers. I'm talking about young kids, high school, college kids, and professional. And the reason why I like working in high school and college is because kids can do more than younger kids. The reason why pro coaches like wide receivers in the pros, they like pro football, not only do they throw the ball, the quality of the quarterbacks, but they can come there and draw up something, and these guys in the NFL receiving room, they can do it. Now, I don't know how they get all the productivity because they look for skill sets that other people don't look for. How well a guy can run with the football, how many different positions can he play? Those things become very, very important. They don't build their receiving core like Chris Carter. I need a basketball team, Greg. I need a point guard, a field general. I need a big dude, either a center or a power forward, someone that can score the basketball. I need someone to be able to run the lanes and do all that. No, because they have Tom Brady, one of the most accurate quarterbacks, and Josh McDaniels and their system they come up with to be able to throw the ball to the backs that are able to kind of complement their passing game. They confuse me. Like, because to me, in the NFL, it always starts with talent. And with New England, no. It starts with your head, how smart you are, how much information, and week after week after week, can you change or throw away what we had and adapt to a new game plan potentially every week. And that's why New England and Belichick, they typically have more college graduates than anyone on the team. That's because they can learn more football, more volumes of information. But when I would put a wide receiver group together, I would do the opposite of what New England has done. So I have to compliment them on what they do. Like, the receivers they have now, Philip Dorsett, I coached him since he was 14 years old. I know the type of talent he has. He just has not achieved since he was drafted in the first round by the Colts. He is a competent NFL receiver. New England, what they look for, Greg, is totally different than things and attributes that some other teams and how they built their roster.
Think at the last part of what you said. You hit it right on the head. They don't, per se, look for the most talent. They figure, I don't need the most talent. We've proven that with Tom Brady. He's one of the smartest quarterback, not the most talented quarterback.
He's the talent.
He is the talent.
Right.
But it's more up here for New England. It's about how well do you understand the game of football? Can you be at the right depth? Can you move around and play different positions? Can you learn the concept? Can you flow in what we do versus what you think you do best? And I think that's what's so unique about the New England Patriots. They take guys and they take their strengths, and their strengths almost don't even matter. It's all about how smart of a football player are you, and can we plug you in with one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, in a lot of people's opinion. And when I look at what they're doing now with Corey Coleman and Benny Fowler, like, these are bodies right now.
Correct.
These are bodies. These are bodies.
Listen, they brought in Amari Darboh and Chad Hansen a couple weeks ago. Those guys are now gone. Mm-hmm. They are replaced by Benny Fowler and Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman is a little different than what you're describing. He's what their tendency is. Corey Coleman
different.
Is a guy that is a high-level talent, but who has not been able to find his way in this league. Corey Coleman's second game in the league. Second game, 5 for 104 and 2 touchdowns. And Cleveland's like, got it. First-round pick, wide receiver, got it. The problem is every other game he played, he has 600 yards and 3 touchdowns combined. So, like, he showed high-level ability instantly and never recaptured it. He wasn't good enough to stay on Cleveland, wasn't good enough to stay on Buffalo. But so what they are doing with him is saying, we'll bring him in. These guys, we got 3 more weeks till Edelman gets back.
Absolutely.
Like, we are trying to tread water till Edelman gets back. The reason I'd be – go ahead, C.
Even not with Edelman. We know the suspension, but – New England, and Greg, I'm pretty certain, will vouch for this. Every year since they've changed the collective bargaining agreement and they shortened the practice, New England's training camp is not 4 weeks. They don't play 4 preseason games. They play 8 because they take the first 4 games of the regular season and churn the bottom of that roster just to see. They just have them bodies there to see who's going to fit in. Now, we have the Edelman suspension now, just like we had the Brady suspension. So we look at the first 4 games. But this is what Belichick does. You can't practice as much. He tells you that, man. We don't know what kind of team we're going to be, but they use those first 4 games, continue to turn the bomb of that roster, and have an additional training camp so they're ready to move on because they know they're going to have a postseason. These other teams are trying to get into the postseason, and they take those 12 weeks to put themselves in position.
Look, this is – you hit it. They just want bodies to be there to where if they strike lightning in a bottle, great. If not – okay, we can still get it done.
But they seem to do that more so than not when they bring guys that don't make – I mean, you get a guy that didn't work out in Cleveland, and he's going to come here. He seems to find whatever it is they're good at.
Let me tell you.
And throw them in that lane.
They churn so much, though. They miss. They have some veteran players.
They're throwing a lot of darts.
Yeah,
they do. Just remember
and the reason hits. Why – and the Maybe reason why it's remember. Not painful is because I'm going to tell you what requirement is necessary. You got to be willing to go there and work for free. They ain't going to pay no wide receiver no money. Now, they did trade for Brandon Cook, but they traded him on out the door when they had to give him some money. Amendola, one of their favorites. The reason why he left to go to Miami? Money. All these guys, for the most part, have been on the minimum. And then Hogan, they gave him a little bump, but he's right in that. You better stay in your lane. If not, we will move on without you. So one of the requirements is you can't require a lot of money to play there either, Greg.
That is 100% accurate. And you look at on the other side of the ball with what they went through with Malcolm Butler. He wanted more money. See, I good player.
Yeah, and it's
we
been like
understand
this for a decade.
You're
Deion Brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wins a Super Bowl MVP.
Yes.
I'll holler at you later, man.
Yeah, but go ahead.
But does this all end when they stop winning? Then all of a sudden, when
of
they
course.
Stop winning, and when Tom Brady goes and he's done, he's finished. All of a sudden, New England doesn't become the Xanadu that it is
no,
anymore,
no.
And people
Belichick,
are going to go there
wherever
and play.
Belichick is, okay, Matt Patricia, you don't take that with you. That's why the players in Detroit are complaining. That's why Mangini didn't win. That's why Josh McDaniel didn't win. As long as the boss Belichick's there, he's going to run the salary cap that way because he just believes he can get more value. That's why he's got the best quarterback that we've ever played. Kirk Cousins, for my team, making twice as much money as Tom Brady.
Well,
because they know what they're doing with the cap, and their emphasis has been to keep those salaries down.
And just one note on the players that they grabbed this week, Corey Coleman most notably. I think some people say, hey, Philip Dorsett, he didn't work out. He just had the best game of his career week 1. Philip Dorsett was acquired at the exact time, essentially, last year that Corey Coleman, they're acquiring him now. And Philip Dorsett was a non-factor last year. It is incredibly difficult in this system to be acquired during the year and make a difference. Giants. They acquired the veteran wide receiver at the tail end of last year that we thought could potentially make a difference from Tennessee, whose name is escaping me.
Kenny Britt.
And Decker. Both of them played in Tennessee.
Right. They acquired Britt's who I was thinking of late in the year. Oh, this is a good body for them. He made no impact, didn't get into it. If you don't have the offseason with New England, which Corey Coleman obviously didn't, it is incredibly difficult. But they had three wide receivers on the roster. You can't even play special teams with three wide receivers on the roster. Like, they had to bring guys in this week.
And Corey Coleman's got two other offenses. Cleveland gave up on him. And he's got their offense in his brain. Buffalo, trading to Buffalo. Buffalo, you think they couldn't use him?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter Bergerman, he can't use another receiver? Yes, he could. They could have used him. He got their offense in his head. How does he get a hold of that New England offense and how quick it is? That determines how long he's going
to
be there.
Greg Jennings, stick around. We got more to come. Other side, how much trouble are Cam Newton and the Panthers in after losing Greg Olsen? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Greg Jennings. Panthers beat the Cowboys Sunday. That's good news. Cam Newton lost his favorite target for the foreseeable future. That is the bad news. Greg Olsen refractured the same foot he injured last season. He says he does hope to return, though, later this season. CeCe, how much does the loss of Greg Olsen impact this Panthers offense?
Now, Greg Olsen, he's one of my favorite players. Now, you talking about a tough guy? A guy that can block on the end of the line of scrimmage? Look how good Carolina's been running the football since he's been there. Mm-hmm. So let's forget about Cam Newton. And a lot of that, they don't have a great offensive line. No, they work in unison. But this guy, in this era where tight ends are one-dimensional, no, this is a three-down tight end. Man, he gets his nose in there. You can flex him out wide. Now, is he as flexible as Gronk here, where you can run individual routes? No. But he is a hell of a wide receiver and a very, very – because I'm not one just to give away the great football player, but he's right there to that good to great argument. You can have that argument. He's got great hands. He runs great routes, really understands defense, what they're trying to do. And with Cam Newton, if you put him in the gun and he puts the ball in the running back and you have an RPO where you quarterback the run pass option, the tight end's ability to be able to get up the seam when those linebackers come up, now they don't have that. So they're going to be running a lot of RPOs. But when you lose his ability to be able to block down, open up a hole, the ability to be able to expand the defense, to be able to get down the field, and he is the surest-handed receiver that they have on their roster. Cam Newton has thrived throwing the ball. I'm going to have to get Dusty later on to break down the numbers as far as who he throws to.
He's been his best receiving option.
There's no question.
The most consistent. And at 6'6", what's Cam's missing point, Nick, when he misses?
Throws high.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of those balls been caught by Greg Olsen that would have been incompletions, Greg.
Look, when I look at Greg Olsen and him not being present for Cam Newton, this is a huge loss. You're talking about Cam's number one receiver over the last 5 years. When healthy, he's been his only 1,000-yard receiver with the outlier year, Kelvin Benjamin, who they had the same amount of yards, but Greg Olsen still had led the team in receiving. This guy, and then not to mention, when you bring in Norv Turner, mm-hmm. a guy who runs an offense that is predicated on a big X receiver, you have that in Devin Funches.
Yep.
A running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield. You have that in McCaffrey, and a tight end that can get down the middle of the field, cross, catch those crossers, catch the seams, and do the big bulk of the body work. You look at Antonio Gates when he was in San Diego. In his success, mm-hmm. this is who Greg Olsen was going to be. You look at Kyle Rudolph, what he was able to do with Norv Turner. This is huge for Cam Newton, for Norv Turner as well, because this is a huge part of his offensive scheme.
And something, Nick, you and I have been discussing, it's even going to have a bigger effect. Because we thought this was going to, because I got a lot of faith in Norv Turner. My last year, 16 years in the league, Miami, Norv Turner was offensive coordinator. He's one of the reasons why I came out of retirement. He's like, Chris, I know how to use you. You and Mike Irvin, I know what to do. Deep in, come back on the outside. Every once in a while, I'll throw you a little bone, throw you one deep. Oh, okay, North, thank you. Quick slant. Yeah, all those things. He knows how to get guys and be successful offensively. But, Nick, what's the biggest problem with Carolina right now? that offensive line.
Well, that's, I mean, that's the, that's you guys are making all these great points about Olsen being Cam's favorite target. He's been targeted 720 times since Cam's rookie year. So I totally agree. But they Ryan Khalil, their left tackle, he's on IR. Their right tackle, Darrell Williams, he was carted off this past weekend. He needs knee surgery. And now Greg Olsen has a broken foot, and we don't know if he's coming back. So your left tackle, your right tackle, and the guy who can help out backup tackles, Greg Olsen, they're all gone. There's a reason why in Atlanta, and I understand it's a road game, but Carolina is a six-point dog this week. Six-point dog. Atlanta looked bad in week one. Carolina's defense looked dominant in week one. And Carolina goes there having a better record than Atlanta last year, and they're a six-point underdog. Explain that to me. It's because there's real concern about who's going to catch the ball for Carolina and how you're going to keep Cam upright. Like, is it going to have to be another game where Cam is constantly under duress? Like, this is the most important player on their offense other than Cam Newton.
And you and I thought that Cam with Norv, because I told you what Norv was going to do to Cam, and I believe that Cam was to that point where he's had enough success, but also in his recent failure, that he would surrender his game. So if Cam's numbers suffer, I don't want people out there criticizing him, because you need to realize what he's working with. He lost his number one receiver the last 5 years. He's already got his left tackle on the rack. Right tackle just went down. Now, Cam is the ultimate force multiplier, but listen, you need some help. And Carolina, if they start to struggle offensively, because, man, they have lost a number of players that will affect their quarterback.
All right, well, Carolina's going to have to show up and play regardless on Sunday. They're not going to give them a couple weeks off to think and regroup here. Who's the next guy up? Who does Cam throw the ball to? Who's going to be the next guy that's going to step up that he's going to feel comfortable enough with?
I think we're going to see a lot of Jarius Wright. Number 13, they brought him over from Minnesota. He was in the system with Norv Turner when Norv was in Minnesota. He runs that deep cross, that deep over. He can get through the seams and create that one-on-one that you want for a Devin Funchess coming in that deep, that big end that he likes to throw to a bigger receiver. I think this is the guy that they have to get productivity out of. And then Ian Thomas. A young guy, he has to step up. This is a great opportunity for him. I mean, he's going to be the future there. So when you look at this opportunity that is presenting itself, they have a lot of young DJ Moore. They have a lot of young receivers.
They've spent a lot of draft capital.
Yes.
On Curtis Samuel, second round pick last year. DJ Moore, a first round pick this year. You mentioned Ian Thomas, I think a fourth round pick this year, because you saw that Greg Olsen last year got dinged up. You knew that at some point you were going to have to transition there. But this is also Christian McCaffrey. Remember, we're going to feature him. 10 carries week one. Right. They were talking about he's going to have 20-plus carries. Like, he's not a between-the-tackles killer the way they tried to make him out to be. Despite the fact that Cam might be my favorite player in the league, you were shocked when I didn't pick the Panthers to make the playoffs. I thought the loss of Norwell was huge. They already had one injury on the offensive line. Darrell Williams, their right tackle, who got carted off this week, he got dinged, more than dinged, in training camp. They're like, we're going to try to work with him anyway. I just thought it's so hard to go through the whole year healthy on the offensive line. If you go into the year with two injuries on the offensive line, you're in trouble after losing your Pro Bowl, All-Pro guard in free agency. Now to lose Olsen? There's a reason the Panthers, we talked about the Cowboys not having a single play over 20 yards. The Panthers had two plays over 15 yards. One was Greg Olsen, and the other was a Cam run. Like, their offense struggled with the explosive plays last week already, and you saw it once Olsen went out of the game.
All right, Greg, thanks so much for coming in, hanging out with us today. Always appreciate it. Coming up on the other side, can Dak Prescott turn things around?
You can wear that suit tomorrow. You ain't even work today.
To get a win in week two.
Next time. Go to New York. They don't need a rookie.
Sunday, it is a great slate of NFL action, headlined by an NFC North robbery as Kirk Cousins and the Vikings head to Lambeau to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Hopefully Aaron Rodgers. Only on Fox and Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area. We'll get to Tom Brady in just a second, but first, Georgia High School Football, Augusta Prep's Bailey Adams. Watch him come down with an amazing catch.
Oh, that's a great catch there.
Oh.
Lost his helmet.
That reminds me of a famous nationally televised game, Antonio Freeman.
Monday night game.
Who were they playing?
Playing against the Vikings.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you were probably drooling on yourself eating some Cheerios.
What were you doing?
Lower,
I was on the field crying.
Playing in the game.
Lower Cape May Regional High School in New Jersey. Patrick Moore has his kick blocked. Don't matter. Breaks a ton of tackles, and he's going to get in the end zone.
Man, that's unfair to the defense, man. They make a great special teams play. They block a kick, and the other team gets more points because of it.
I'm going to tell you what's unfair. Couple young little fat guys here at the end. Look at the linemen for the other team. See them in the break. Watch them. Ah, man, where's the hot dog? Where the food? Why all them people
They're
running
not in the
there?
Play.
I'm exhausted.
They're celebrating them.
I'm exhausted.
Fine.
Yeah, he's overweight. Yeah. Work out.
I got killed on Twitter for saying something yesterday about a coach.
Don't read it.
Don't read your mentions, Des Bryant.
Finally, we're going to talk about that. Ocean Springs High School in Mississippi, Isaac Gowdy. Catching the INT off a teammate's foot.
Oh, look at this. Now, unlike our great highlight yesterday, this was not an intentional assist from one teammate to another, but it counts all the same.
Is that Tim Tebow going back to high school, number 15? Oh. Lefty?
Oh, it looks like him. Same throwing motion and all.
Yeah, it looked like when he was playing for the Jets.
Yeah.
Nick, you want to play in or out?
Yeah, I would love to.
Last week, Philip Dorsett was the Patriots' only wide receiver with more than one catch. Yesterday, they signed Corey Coleman and Benny Fowler to bolster their wide receiving core. CC, you in or out on the new Patriots, the New England Patriots, having an impact this season, these two guys?
I got to be out. They had a couple veterans I thought were going to be able to stick. I thought because they might be able to do the type of things that the other guys didn't do, but no, they're just turning their roster now. They're going to take the first 4 weeks of the season, try to find someone. I'm going to tell you, alarming, though, they signed both these guys, didn't call Des Bryant. They didn't see the
You're
tweet
right.
from
yeah.
Des. I'm out.
I mean, they only had three wide receivers on their roster before this. You can't You can't go into a game. You can't practice. That's a great point. Can't even practice, much less go into a game. I'm out on this because Philip Dorsett did have a good impact week one of this year, but he was acquired week one of last year. Mm-hmm. And while he's stuck on the roster because they had traded for him, they had given up something for him, so they were invested in him, he didn't have an impact at any point during the season last year. Takes a while to learn this Pat system. Can't get it done in a week. But by the way, if I'm wrong, and if the Pats get something out of Corey Coleman, when the Browns cut him after spending a first-round pick on him, when the Bills cut him despite having nobody at wide receiver, that's going to be another magic trick by the New England Patriots. I just don't see it happening.
All right, moving on to the Cowboys.
I think they're going to put them on each other's shoulder. They're going to walk around and do something special.
Make one wide receiver.
Wear a big trench coat.
On the Cowboys, yesterday, owner Jerry Jones said that Dak Prescott is somewhere between Jared Goff and Cam Newton. A lot of people consider those two elite quarterbacks. So, Nick, are you in or out on Dak Prescott being a top 10 QB?
In the NFL?
In the NFL.
In the NFC, maybe.
Oh.
Maybe in the NFC. Not in the NFL. I mean, I do the NFC. So I'm out. I'm out. And I'll give you, go ahead, see. I can do the NFC list maybe off the top of my head in a moment. But no, come on. 7 of his last 9 games, he's under 200 yards passing. No. Not top 10 quarterback.
Let's go Tom Brady. Let's go A-Rod. Let's go Russ.
Mm-hmm. Big Ben, Breeze, Matt Ryan, Cam.
Luck.
We can keep going. Deshaun. How about Kirk Cousins?
Phillip
how about
Rivers.
Alex Smith? How about Phillip Rivers? We're leaving guys
Jared
out
Goff.
Now. Jared Goff. How about them? Patty Mahomes.
Sam Darnold. Give me some of that.
Right. Did we say? I'm not ready for Darnold yet. But did
what?
We?
No. What?
I'm not. I can't do him yet.
Why?
Listen, see, I know you like to overreact to things.
I'm a football coach. I'm a football coach. I see you do it once. I know you can do it.
That's fair enough.
I know I can get it.
Right now in the NFC East, we know Wentz and Alex Smith are better. We know that.
In the division.
In the NFC North, we know Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, and Stafford are better. We're at 5. In the NFC South, we know the 3 guys that are MVPs are better. And in the NFC West, we know Goff and Russell Wilson are better. That's 10 guys in the NFC that are better.
Dang.
Let me guess, you're
that ain't great.
Out.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
That ain't
great. I'm out. Eagles quarterback, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Get it, Jenna.
Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz will reportedly miss a few more weeks. In week one, Nick Foles and the offense struggled, scoring only 18 points, but it was still enough to beat Atlanta.
All right, Chris, you win or out on the Eagles staying afloat without Wentz?
Because their head coach, Doug, he's seen this before. I got confidence in him and Howie Roseman, who's put together that great roster. So I got to stay in. Like, I thought that they could support the quarterback, but the quarterback's a backup. Well, what are backups? Backups are inconsistent, not only in their throwing, but how they play week to week. So I'm not surprised Nick played like that. That's why Philadelphia Eagles fans, get off of my partner Nick Wright when he criticized you guys last, because he saw the same thing last year. So don't trip. Right. But I'm in because they got a good roster.
And I'm in also because of who they're playing this week. You know who they're playing this week? A team that's starting a backup quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick and a team that I know they were great in week one. And maybe Tampa will be the big shock of the season. But right now I'm not buying in on that yet. I don't think Tampa's going to be able to support Ryan Fitzpatrick in this game the way they did in week one against New Orleans. So staying afloat just means they're already 1-0. We're not talking about Wentz missing more than two or three more games. Staying afloat just means playing around 500. Like, yeah, absolutely I'm in because of the roster around the quarterback.
All right, on to the Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers situation. The star running back still has not reported to the team, so the Steelers have removed him from their depth chart completely. Nick, you in or out on L. Bell showing up this week?
Like playing roulette, I'm just keep betting on black until it comes. I'm just going to say in every week till he shows up because I'm going to regret it so much if I finally say out and he doesn't show up. I thought he was showing up before week one. This is a guy that has made around $13 million in his career. He gonna give up $900,000 again?
What's the difference between last week or this week?
It's another $900,000.
But he's suddenly gonna be like, oh, now I know how it works.
Listen, well, I don't think he's gonna hold out the full 10 weeks. We know that 10 weeks is the maximum. So at some point he's coming back. Maybe it was just, hey, you guys last year, you guys franchised me, and I showed up before week one. This year I'm gonna show up before week two. Like I'm in because he can't give up $900,000 again, can he?
The law firm of Carter and Wright have been supporting this case for over 2 years.
Okay.
Hard, 5 days a week, representing our client.
Full
because
attention.
We believe that our client is innocent of all charges. But at this point, I got to depart from the law firm. I'm by myself. He told his buddies, yeah, man, I'll be there next week. And he wasn't there.
Yeah.
What? I'm out because I don't know. He told his friends he was going to be there last week, didn't show up, so we don't know when. I'm going to be out. But Nick can't do this based on roulette. He said, oh, it's a roulette. I'm going to bet on black. Of course you're betting on black. That's your favorite color. All the quarterbacks.
And the other one. The quarterbacks and the other ones.
Yeah. My partner, my law firm, we splitting.
Me and Wesley. I'm out. Me and Wesley Snipes, Passenger 57.
All right, last, we have another star athlete that may have gotten caught with a burner account. Yesterday, Dez Bryant tweeted, the problem was my ex-teammates respected me more than the coaches. Then Dez, quote, tweeted himself with, I can see that, which he later deleted, leading many people to speculate that he meant to tweet that comment from a burner account. So embarrassing. So awkward. CC, you went around on burner accounts.
I had to get a
tutorial.
I had to take the staff. I had to sit them down
and
say,
listen. It happened this morning.
Like, what are the benefits from stuff like this? Because I'm involved in social media, but I'm going to tell you, you can write me something. You can be as horrible as people are, and there's a good chance I'm not going to read it. And even if I do read it, it's not going to affect me because I don't care. And my level of I don't care, I'm talking about is way up to here. So I'm out. Like, I don't understand. Like, I expect people to act bizarre and to say bizarre things where they don't have to because it's not face-to-face. Typically, when you have encounters with people face-to-face, they get their game together.
Here's the reason that I'm out on this. If Dez this whole time has had burner accounts, then use them, bro. Because the stuff you're tweeting from the real account ain't great for your job prospects.
Right.
Like, KD had these burner accounts, and he was using them. Now, the KD actual, KD Trey 35 or whatever his actual account was, he was just, like, promoting Nike, doing charitable stuff. And then with the burner accounts, he was like, you suck, don't like you, KD's the greatest. Dez, on his real account, was like, you suck, don't like you, Dez is the greatest. That's not how you use these things, bro. Like, so if you've taken the time to make them, use them. The tweets that you want to send talking, flaming the offensive coordinator, saying might be interested in this team, might not, don't use those
burner
from the checkmark
account.
Come on, man. Come on,
It's burner account 101.
It's burner account 101. Call up your guy, KD. He'll help you out.
Leave KD alone.
We got to take a break. Coming up, if you can ball like KD,
you can have a burner. Okay.
How will a hobbled Aaron Rodgers handle a dangerous Vikings defense? Next on First Things First. Back here in First Things First, and on Sunday, our guy CC called his first NFL game down in Miami. CC teaches us a lot about football off camera. Check out this cool moment he shared with Dolphins rookie tight end Mike Gesicki after the game.
He's going to be sitting there just like, be patient. Even be looking in this way. Like, if I was looking at the kid, I'd be like, I'm kind of lost.
Right.
I would have put my inside foot back. I would have sold it like that. Hit him right there, the ball going to take you out.
Right.
And if
he
takes a bad throw, which it was, that's what this is about. Right. You're the big show. It's about getting better.
No doubt.
We're
going
to give you the opportunity.
I appreciate it.
All right?
I appreciate it.
That's so cool.
So how'd that happen?
Well, first, I was kind of attracted to the kid. After meeting with Adam Gase and the coach, he was telling me, like, listen, we hid this guy during the preseason. We didn't throw to him deliberately. Chris, he's got a 40-inch. Well, I knew because he's from Penn State, drafted in the second round.
Off the charts at the combine.
Unbelievable athlete. Best tight end in Penn State history, catches, yards, and everything. He told me he was going to move him out the wide receiver like Gronk. I saw it during the game, but they put Malcolm Butler on him. Malcolm Butler jammed him up. So, and intercepted the pass. So after the game, we were getting ready to go to the, well, no, we lost, missed our flights and stuff. We were getting ready to go back to the hotel. And myself and Brian, and he just walked past with his family. And I had been talking with him, had talked with him before the game, and met with him at practice. And then he's a sponge for information. He is going to be a good football player for the Miami Dolphins. Phenomenal athlete.
That's really cool. That's something when we were at the Super Bowl together a couple years ago, like, C'll stop and coach you whether you're ready for it or not. Like, you see a football player, you notice something, like that old high school coach comes out in you a lot.
And being at the games, on the field, talking to the players and everything, man, it was really, really special.
Remember that time when I met you out in L.A. and you taught me how to get into that three-point stance? I wasn't even asking you.
No, that, you know what, Jenna, since
that's why we didn't hire you. That's what took so long. That's what took so long.
Either that or that she was doing push-ups poolside
day of the interview.
No, it was definitely the three-point stance.
You did like 8 burpees. I said, hire that woman. Give her that job.
Bless you for that, by the way. Time for Stories to Start Your Morning, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Ryan Fitzpatrick had arguably the best performance of any QB in Week 1, over 400 yards and 4 touchdowns, in a win over the Saints. Tampa Bay's head coach, Dirk Cutter, called him a good leader who backs up what he says with how he plays. See, is Jameis Winston in any danger of losing his starting job to Fitzpatrick?
Absolutely. And listen to the coach's words. Cutter's not a guy that would say something about his franchise quarterback unless Jameis was talking too much. Remember some of the video of Jameis last year talking to the team? Mm-hmm. And not being able to back it up by your performance or by your character. So watch what's going on in Tampa Bay. All right. Even if they don't go with Fitzpatrick, they still might move on from Jameis with another option next year.
Especially with new people in charge there that aren't tied to Jameis.
Yes.
Bless you, Jenna. The way you would be typically your number one overall pick. I don't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to duplicate this performance.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Tampa has what I thought was the hardest opening 3 games of any team in the league, and historically the hardest opening 3 games any team since the merger. When you go New Orleans, Philly, Pittsburgh, if they come out of that 2-1 or 3-0,
name even the starter.
Then I guess he gets to be the starter. I'm skeptical though.
All right, moving on now. After losing 33-13 to the Rams, the Raiders are close to re-signing Martavis Bryant. If you recall, Oakland cut him before the season started after trading a 3rd-round pick for him in the offseason. All this with a possible drug suspension lingering over the troubled wideout. See, can Martavis actually bolster this offense?
The room becomes more talented, but you have to ask me, you got more ingredients, but what's the chef going to cook? The cook is Gruden, and right now he's shrunting up his face and everything. But they don't have a slot receiver. Martavis, Jordy Nelson, and Amari Cooper, all of them play outside predominantly. Now, is he going to turn one of these other guys into a slot receiver? It's something I haven't seen, so I'm worried about the fit. from a skill set, but he is a good football player.
Before the season, we heard Amari Cooper is going to be the focal point of this offense. After game one, Gruden said, we got to find a way to get Amari Cooper more involved. He only had the one catch, but he only had three targets. Like, so he didn't have a lot of opportunities. How does this help Amari Cooper? And where is the consistency of message? When they cut Martavis Bryant, Gruden did something odd. He said, maybe we'll bring him back next year. And then you end up, which is a really weird thing to say, if you cut a player that you traded for, and then they bring him back after 1 week. I know they didn't want to guarantee the money that would have happened if he was on week one roster, but it's an odd thing they did.
All right, bad news now for the Falcons. Pro Bowl linebacker Deion Jones will be placed on the IR after suffering a foot injury in the loss to the Eagles. The Falcons say they expect him back later this season. CeCe, how big of a blow is this to that Atlanta defense?
It's a big blow. Their head coach, Dan Quinn, the type of defense they put on the field is an undersized, very, very fast defense. I believe he's their most valuable player. Plays all three down, sideline to sideline. Second-year player out of LSU. He's undersized, but he's a big thumper. He can guard tight ends and running backs in man-to-man. And it's multiplied because they lost their starting safety.
Right. They lost Keanu Neal and Deion Jones in the first game of the season. Like, that's brutal. It's two brutal losses. And I wonder how similar is this to what Pittsburgh dealt with, granted, not nearly as serious of an injury, losing Ryan Shazier, middle linebacker that can go out and do a lot of different things for you.
Right, we know he's a good player, but it's some small things that they started missing. That defense fell apart.
Absolutely, and so that week one loss for Atlanta is triple-fold bad. They should have won the game. That's why it's bad.
Yeah.
You lose your best player in the secondary and arguably your most versatile linebacker. Brutal way to open the season.
All right, we end with Matt Patricia. Reports are surfacing that Lions players are upset with their new head coach over team rules and the amount of work that he's putting them through. Seems like he's trying to bring the Patriot way to Detroit. Just a reminder, they got basically blown out by the Jets. CeCe, what's your reaction to this?
My reaction is because I spent this weekend with the Tennessee Titans and the Miami Dolphins. The Tennessee Titans have one of the same things that the Detroit Lions are going through. They have a disciple in Mike Vrabel, like Detroit has under Belichick. The thing that I have seen with the Tennessee players and what they said they enjoyed about Vrabel was, he said, I'm going to treat you how you treat the team. So my respect level, how do you respect the team? If you don't respect the team, I'm not going to respect you. But if you put the team in high regard and you do things to put the team first, then I'll put you first in my decision-making. The veteran players, Delanie Walker, I sat down and talked with him, loved it. Said it was one of the best coaching philosophies. The players love being with Vrabel because every day, if you did what you were supposed to do and put the type of effort in, he responded by giving you a great deal of respect. This is what the guys who leave New England, they miss. The respect factor from pro players doesn't go to them assistant coaches unless you give the pro players respect. So when you come in with that condescending attitude like Bill Belichick without the resume and the trophies, the NFL players have not responded, and we have seen ugly results everywhere all these disciples have gone. Now, I'm glad I was in Miami to talk to the Tennessee players, because I was able to get the difference in the coaching approach and how the veteran players have responded. But this is something that you must continue to watch, because those players don't have long-term guaranteed contract. That coach does.
And I would put Vrabel in a separate boat, because Vrabel was a Belichick player. Vrabel coached then in Houston and coached at Ohio State.
Great
So
point.
He has seen different coaches. I know Houston has a Belichick disciple as well, and Bill O'Brien, but he has seen Urban Meyer's approach. He also knows what it's like as a player to be under the thumb of the Patriot way and the good and the bad that comes along with it. But this whole we're trying to bring the Patriot way thing with us hasn't just been coaches. We saw Scott Pioli try to bring the Patriot way general managing with him, and it failed miserably in Kansas City. His head coach thought his phone was tapped. It was such paranoia and such attention to things that don't matter. What folks got to realize, and I can't believe people don't get it, and I thought maybe Patricia would, because he seemed a little different. Like, I know you didn't like the Goodell clown no shirt, but that felt different than most Patriot assistant coaches. I thought maybe he would stray from the nest a bit. What Here's the first five steps to the Patriot way. Step one, get Brady and Belichick. Step two, make sure you keep Brady and Belichick. Step three, keep Brady and Belichick. Step four, give them a lot of money to make sure.
Step five, check one through four.
Exactly. Like, the Patriot way, there's no osmosis here. There's no, we've been around, now I get it. And so we have seen team after team try to do what only works there. And it's not surprising that it wouldn't work. What is surprising me is that Matt Patricia would think he has the, dare I say, right to treat players the way Belichick does. You haven't earned that, man.
But and please tell me if I'm wrong here, and I may be reading this the wrong way, but half of it was the way he's treating the players. The other half of it was them complaining that it's too hard, that he's pushing them too hard. Well, I don't understand that. Here's a team that went out who looked woefully unprepared, whose quarterback, who's making, what, $29 million or something, looked terrible and inconsistent and just absolutely inaccurate, whose players just, they didn't show up against the Jets, who have a new quarterback but weren't a great team, and the players are complaining that they're getting pushed a little too hard. What part of that am I missing? Should I feel sympathy for them?
The problem is, in pro football, you can only have so many padded practices. And we get these distinctions in coaching. Is the guy a tacticianer? Is he a drill sergeant? Or is he a player's coach? And typically, you're not going anywhere without them players. And sometimes these coaches coach football as if what they're teaching is more important than the human beings. And when you go from Jim Caldwell, who I would tell you, in all my years in the National Football League, you are not going to meet 10 better men than Jim Caldwell. And then you take him out after winning, and then you bring in someone who's very, very condescending. It's shocking to the players. And you don't have to treat people that way. I tell Nick Saban, that's why Nick Saban, his stuff only works in Alabama. Because you don't have to talk to players that way. You don't have to treat players that way. And it only works in them two places,
in
New England and at the University of Alabama.
And Nick Saban tried this with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
And Jason Taylor.
Listen to some of the same complaints.
Yeah, Jason Taylor would tell you. Jason Taylor, on his way to a Hall of Fame career, they're going through a walkthrough, and Nick Saban is barking at him to tie his shoes. Jason Taylor said, "Man, do you know how much my body hurts? I'm not bending down to tie my shoes." Saban stops everything, demands he ties his shoes.
Hundreds of players go through walkthrough with house shoes on.
Right. For Saban, I think the big issue was grown men who are also rich with power compared to what we used to.
And the practices were too hard, too.
But real quick, you don't have to know.
And I didn't mean the treating the players. No, my response was to them complaining that the practices were too hard.
Of course, but here's the thing, that you don't have to know pro football as a viewer the way Chris does, or you don't have to follow it to understand this. You have to trust people if you're going to buy in and if you're going to deal with what is sometimes tough behavior or high expectations. I'm going to use a very personal example. Chris and I on television have what sometimes appears to be a brotherly relationship, and sometimes it appears that we are absolutely sideways. If I didn't know how much Chris loves me, if there wasn't the fact that he has helped my son in school, that my daughter was in the office yesterday, and he said he was going to go to one of her volleyball games, then the days were sideways, or the days he's asking something of me that I don't want to do, it's not happening. But you can't show up somewhere and instantly have that relationship. And so for some reason, they don't seem to get that.
One thing about Bill Parcells, he talked about, even in losing, there's some ugly parts to this business. Denny Green used to go back on the plane and check on every single guy. How you doing? Saw you had a rough one. All right, take it easy. He used to tell me when I tore both my calves, I'll see you next Sunday. On Sunday. We'd be on the plane. I'd be strapped out, have ice bags, taking some medication. I'll see you next Sunday. And he'd go up and down the list, up and down the rows, guys taking medication, guys getting IVs, guys hurt, checking on each and every one of them. And you know what you do for that coach? On Wednesday, when it's full go, I'm in there arguing with the trainer. I can practice. I can try to get out there. And that's the type of mentality that you have to develop. There's a trust. I'm going to trust you with my talent. You can do what you think is best for me, but there's a trust factor. And in that little personal touch, that comes with being a seasoned coach, which these coaches don't have. And it will be a problem. Because it ain't the X's and O's in the NFL. It's the Willies and the Joes. And you need football players to go out there and do that work. And that's something that he's going to have to learn.
That is a great story. All right, CeCe, thanks. We've got to take a break coming up. How scary is the Vikings defense for a hobbled Aaron Rodgers? Plus, Carson Palmer is here. About 15 minutes or so. That's next on First Things First. Here on First Things First, we are going viral. Draymond Green was quite influential in getting DeMarcus Cousins to join the Warriors this summer. The season hasn't even started, and Draymond is already assisting Boogie. Check this out, narrated by Boogie Cousins.
Shout out to my pool guy. Came through to come clean the pool. Dre, what up, bro? Straight?
Yeah, I'm about to go clean the school.
Come on, man, let's show them what you're good at. Look at this dumbass. Look at this dumbass. Bro, get them scandalous ass bugs, bro.
Said get them scandalous bugs out of there.
The attachment, obviously, he didn't get it to work. You know, I've done a little pool boy stuff in my day and everything.
Really?
Yeah, it has a little attachment on it. You have to be able to lock it in. Obviously, Michigan State guy couldn't figure it out. Like, good teammate, though. Good teammate.
Good team. Yeah.
It's nice to see that, actually.
I mean, Draymond and Boogie are going to get along great until they don't. Like, there will be moments. We will have a topic on the show. Is Boogie tearing the Warriors apart? And then a couple days later, they'll be fine. Because those two guys will butt heads. But they have to have that foundational relationship in order to get past those moments. They'll be fine.
Yeah, they're going to cause more problems in the NBA than they are with their relationship.
Long year for people outside of the Bay Area.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. All right, moving on now to Aaron Rodgers. It was a sweet, bittersweet outing for him on Sunday. First game back after missing most of last season. Starts the game, that's sweet. Has to leave the game injured, that's bitter. Then comes back with one of the greatest comebacks we've ever seen. That is sweet again. But now with an unknown status for week two, Rodgers says he's taking things one day at a time. CeCe, how much of a challenge will the Vikings defense be for what's most likely going to be a pretty hobbled Aaron Rodgers?
Well, in these games, they're rivalry games. There's one reason Aaron Rodgers came back into the Packers-Bears game was because he said it was about the rivalry. He said he learned under Brett Favre that you got to be real, real tough as a quarterback. Now, with the Vikings, the Bears, and the Packers, those are our biggest rivals in that division. And on one day, you would say, oh, who's the Packers' biggest rival? People say the Bears. Well, the Vikings have been a lot better than the Bears, so other Packers fans would be like, their biggest rivalry is with the Minnesota Vikings. And also, they happen to be the team that knocked the quarterback out of the game last year that Aaron Rodgers took exception to. So if Aaron Rodgers is able to come back into this game, if he is 75%, he's going to try to play against the Minnesota Vikings. I would advise him, if he's not 80%, I wouldn't play him. They got Washington, Buffalo, Detroit, San Francisco. Then they got a bye. Washington, Buffalo, if it takes a week or two to get back, like they found money on the side of the road in winning the game against Chicago that they weren't supposed to win. So I would be slow to bring him back, even though I know the player is going to want to, against the Vikings, he's going to want to come back and play. Based on the way they're, and we know how their season is dependent upon him, I would wait and potentially give him some type of, just to get him back to at least 85, 90%.
The counterpoint to that is this. The single biggest game on every team's schedule every year is the home game against the other best team in your division. The single biggest game for that your chances of winning your division is your home game against the team that could win your division. So that's what this game is for Green Bay. Chris's point is, but after this game, schedule softens up.
Yeah.
Instead of being, if you're 0-1 going into this game, it's different, but you're 1-0. And football's dangerous either way. This Vikings team, when you're not fully mobile, when you don't have a credible running threat, it is really dangerous. This Vikings defense has all pro guys on the line, at the linebacking core, and in the secondary. we saw Harrison Smith make an enormous play at the goal line against San Francisco, crushing a guy to force a fumble. We saw Anthony Barr last year break Aaron Rodgers' collarbone, and we saw Danielle Hunter this week have the most pressures of any player in the league. And by the way, Sheldon Richardson, oh, he's a nice new addition. Oh. He had the third most pressures of any player in the league. The lack of a running game is some would say that's why you got to play Rodgers. That's to me almost a mark in the be cautious with him category. The best rusher for the Packers against the Bears was Aaron Rodgers. Take out his rushing, they had 17 carries for 54 yards. That's 3 yards a carry. Like, this is a tough game if he is not able to do the off-schedule plays, move around in the pocket. Like, this is a scary one for Packers fans. Now, if you win it, you're in great shape. You're in catbird seat. 2-0 in your division, soft schedule coming up. But, man, oh, man, you come out of it with Aaron Rodgers hurt and your season's over.
If Brett Favre was the quarterback of this team 10, 15 years ago and the same exact situation, is there any doubt whether Favre would play or not?
Mike McCarthy don't have no say-so with Brett Favre.
That is my question. Has Aaron Rodgers earned the right to decide whether he plays or not, or is this out of his hands?
Y'all think the medical staff told Aaron Rodgers he can go back in that game? No. Aaron Rodgers told them, y'all take me across the street. That's where their practice facility is. I'm going to try to get me some throws in. Randall Cobb came to the locker room looking for him at halftime. He wasn't there. He was across the street at their indoor practice facility trying to see if he could throw the ball. Then he came back out at halftime. Cobb said, hey, what's going on? He said, hey, don't worry about it. I'm going to go. But when you get in situations like this, man, you're a star player. The coaches and the staff give you more juice because it's your career. And this is not a ligament.
Wait, what's more juice? More say?
More power.
Yeah, more power. Like you have around here, Jenna. Yeah. We got a staff of 10. That. You got 9 of them working for you.
Yeah.
You got the juice around here.
Yeah, I do.
Carson will tell you he's coming up. Uh-huh. Man, when you're that guy in the franchise, you can make that call. So a lot like Brett Favre, there were times we played against Brett Favre. He was not supposed to be playing. And he limped out there, got out there, and did what he does. That's the leeway that you've earned. That's the credibility that you've earned with the staff.
And while I agree he's earned it, it is not fair to hold any player, even Aaron Rodgers, to the Brett Favre toughness standard. Maybe the toughest football player ever. Certainly the toughest to play that position. Never missed a game. And sometimes it was to his own detriment. Sometimes it would have been better had he missed a game. But that streak mattered a lot to him, and that's just how he was wired.
Yes.
If Aaron Rodgers is going to look like he looked in the second half of that football game, he should not play. If he's on one leg, it's not just Khalil Mack you're avoiding. It's a
better defense.
Monsters. If he is not mobile, he should not play in this football game.
All right, we got to take a break, but for a good reason. Look who's here. Pro Bowl quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner Carson Palmer is in the house. Back here, first things first, look who's here. Pro Bowl quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner Carson Palmer, full beard and everything. He's relaxing. He's
good
not playing
you,
anymore. He's happy.
Good to see you. Glad
he's
to
not
be
banged
here.
Up. He's not hurt.
Me.
He's in a good mood.
For the first time in a long time on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I actually feel pretty good.
Isn't that great?
I feel pretty good. I bounced back pretty good.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here, Carson. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's start with another USC quarterback, Sam Darnold, who lit up the football world on Monday, throwing for 198 yards and 2 touchdowns in a dominant win over the Detroit Lions. His head coach, Todd Bowles, says he's excited by Darnold's old soul after the win. Carson, I'll start with you. Were you surprised by Sam's success in his debut, just knowing what you know about him, the way he played, and the team that he has surrounded him right now?
I wasn't surprised at all. I started following him his first couple games at SC and all the way up to now. But, you know, that he's not surprised by the spotlight. He's coming from Los Angeles. He was kind of thrust into things early his first couple games. I remember him going to University of Washington in Seattle when Washington was a monster that year.
With USC season on the brink at the time.
On the brink. And he went in there and won, and then just continuously won and won and won. You know, and then to come to New York and start as a, you know, as a rookie on Monday Night Football against a really good opponent and a tough place to play, I really wasn't surprised. And I think that's what Coach Bowles was saying is, you know, he's seen it from day one that this kid is mature, this kid is beyond his years, and he's ready for this.
One of the biggest ways the NFL's changed since just when you came into the league and now is how we treat rookie quarterbacks. So the last rookie first-round pick to not start at least one game his rookie year was Aaron Rodgers. A decade ago, you were the number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. You didn't play at all your rookie season. What's the benefits to sitting, and what benefits, if any, do you see for players being thrust into it like Darnold is immediately?
Well, you know, it's funny that Sam's in the same kind of position where he has Josh McCown, where I had John Kitna when I came in the league, and John Kitna was the best thing for me for all my years in the NFL. He absolutely taught me how to be a pro, how to take care of myself. He taught me all the nuances that a quarterback coach can't teach you. And that's exactly what Sam's got, but Sam's playing. But he's got that with Josh McCown. Josh McCown is the best thing that happened to Sam.
Yeah, I want to stay on the Josh McCown thing, too, because I'm big with Sam Darnold. Like, I like him. I like the attributes. I like the way he was raised. And I think also when you're at a program like USC in Los Angeles, you're not in a fishbowl. So you're more apt to handle. I thought he was more apt to handle New York than Baker coming from Oklahoma. And they're both big programs. But in Norman, it's totally different than being in Los Angeles. But the veteran quarterback, because for me, I've learned the coaches in the NFL, they can be special as far as they are the best. But the veteran players know the league and know football better sometimes than the coaches. Explain that to fans and how important Josh would be to a guy that's starting in that environment and throws that type of interception his first play. What are some of the words that you might get from Kitna or McCown that help comfort a young quarterback?
I'll never forget that when I walked off the field after my first interception and John came over and put his arm around me and said, all that matters is what you do next. It's how you respond to a bad play. It's how you respond. Well, Sam went out and responded the rest of the game. It wasn't the next play or the next series. He continuously responded throughout the game after the worst possible way to start off any individual's career. So, Josh is that same guy. And as you're talking about, you know, coaches are great. Coaches are instrumental in all of our development as players. But it's just like when you're a kid at home and your dad says the same thing over and over and over again, but you hear it different when your uncle says it or your cousin says it. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with a quarterback. When your coach says it over and over and over again, it becomes monotonous and kind of goes in one ear and out the other. But when it comes from a guy that's playing right there next to you with a jersey on and shoulder pads on, sometimes he can say the same exact thing, but it totally hits you in the right way and you learn from it and you move on.
The other parallel you can draw between you and Sam Darnold is both of you were brought into, if you will, save a franchise. You know, your team, I think that you guys were 8-8, I think, when you took over after Kitna's first year. Look, Sam Darnold's brought in here to basically do that. It's the reason he's starting from day one. Did you feel that pressure on your back that, hey, everyone's looking at me now as the guy that's going to come in here and turn this organization around?
Without question, every top 10 quarterback or every high first-round pick feels that pressure. And that's automatically assumed upon you when you are taken that high in the draft. Sam, you know, he's in a position where there's not a ton of talent around him. You look here in New York and you got, you know, Eli's got, you know, OBJ. Mm-hmm. He's got Saquon in the backfield. He's got Shepard also at receiver. He's got Ingram at tight end. You look at Sam's situation, Sam is the perfect guy to be where the Jets are right now. There's not a ton of talent surrounding him. He is the perfect guy because he can make things out of nothing. He did it his entire career at SC. Nobody's open, manipulates the pocket, extends the play, and then finds somebody for 20 yards and finds somebody for 30. He can do that here in New York because he doesn't have that number one go-to receiver or that dominant guy in the backfield.
All right, let's move on to Le'Veon Bell now. The situation with him and the Steelers continues to get worse. Pittsburgh removed him from the depth chart ahead of their Week 2 matchup against the Chiefs. Carson, you've been in a situation similar to this in your career. What do you make of L. Bell and the Steelers right now, where he's at and where they're at?
Yeah, I'm for the player. I want to see Le'Veon get paid the money that he deserves to get paid. I'm always going to side with the player. You know, there's guys that I understand are going to have a different argument with that, but Le'Veon's done it year after year after year after year. He's consecutively put up big numbers. He wants to be paid like the Todd Gurley's, like the David Johnson's, and the top-tier guys in the league. He's earned the right to say, hey, I want to be paid, and I justified my numbers I want and the contract I want with last year and the year before and the year before and the year before.
So you mentioned David Johnson, because David Johnson, I know he was out last year with injury, and that's one of the big reasons, along with your injury later, that season didn't go the way Cardinals fans had hoped. But they're very similar players in that they are excellent running backs, but they are excellent for their position or any position, pass catchers. What types of fits as a quarterback would you see the defense be put in because of David Johnson in the 2016 year when he really had his breakout monster season? And what type of things are you missing when you don't have that player in the backfield?
Yeah, I mean, he's a nightmare as far as mismatches are concerned. There isn't a linebacker that I would walk up the line of scrimmage and say, okay, Dave's not going to get open against that guy. And I think Roethlisberger's in the same situation. Mm-hmm. He gets in his empty sets and he puts Le'Veon on the inside and he's got a Mike middle linebacker or a strong side linebacker one-on-one with Le'Veon, he's going to find a way to get him the ball. So he's a absolute nightmare in the mismatch situations. Down in the red zone, it's an even bigger problem for defenses because you got to worry about him lining up in the backfield. You got to worry about, you know, him getting screens out of the backfield and then getting outside as a receiver. Because who are you going to put on him? Are you going to take a corner and leave him over there? Are you going to put a safety on him? Are you going to put a linebacker? There's just so many problems and so many steps that defenses have to take preparing for you to decide how are we going to try to stop him this week.
Now, Carson, like yourself and my relationships with players, I understand the labor. So I understand typically I side with the players. And L. Bell, it's great to have you conversate on them because, yes, you had those holdouts and everything. They're very, very similar. Let me tell you what wasn't similar, though, because I've been fighting for L. Bell to get paid for the last 2 years. But Carson Palmer wasn't suspended, not once, but twice. All right? That's why David Johnson is able to get the security from the Bidwell family. That's why Stan Kroenke felt like, man, you know something? Jenny, your contract's not up for 2 years. I'm getting ready to give you a bunch of money right now to Todd Gurley. Because those guys haven't been suspended. So when the player puts the pressure on the organization, that because they're not the same players. When you got a guy that is one positive drug test away from being suspended for a long, long time, you have to weigh that. But what Carson did, though, with his teammates, you did know when Carson wasn't going to be there. Because when he said, I ain't going to be there, you ain't have to worry about him showing up. So my biggest problem was the inconsistency with the teammates, Carson, in the mixed messages telling the offensive line that he was going to be there and then not show up and have them have to address the media and say, hey, he's going to be here Wednesday. That's what I didn't like. You were very, very consistent. Now, you breach our trust in the thing that we hold true, that I'm going to be able to take care of my teammate and my teammate's going to take care of me.
No doubt. But what is ringing in the back of Le'Veon's head as we're talking right now is when his knee went the wrong way at home against the Cincinnati Bengals and he tore that knee in half. That is hanging in the back of his head. He knows mm-hmm. he was so close to almost being able to never play again. And he knows he could be potentially so close to not ever being able to play again. That's why he wants the long-term security of a long-term contract.
And that is something, obviously, you know exactly what that's like. The best season you had in Cincinnati, the best season that team had, it was against the Steelers, right? Kimo von Olhoeven, I don't mean to bring up something bad, yeah. But you know, how much did that experience color the way you viewed almost the finances and the negotiation of the NFL moving forward when you saw how quickly it can be taken from you?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, your career can be over in a blink. Your season can be over in a blink. I've lost a season in a blink. I'm sure you have over your years. But at the end of the day, Le'Veon's looking at this situation like, you know, I'm getting closer and closer to that number, that age, mm-hmm. number 30, where people start devaluing his, right. his contract. And, you know, he's already been through one serious knee injury. He's one more away from never seeing that guaranteed long-term money. So he's trying to make sure it gets, you know, gets taken care of, hopefully this season.
Yeah, now is the time for him. He is probably as marketable as he would ever be.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.